Welcome to the Otherworlds GG Community Cast. This is episode number 55. I am table for two. That's right, number 55. I'm table for two, and I'm joined by Mellified and Alien Pickle. What's up, fellas?
Hello. This is Mellified. I am just so excited. My Steam Deck showed up today, so I'm going to get to mess with that and be posting impressions and information on our Discord at discord.otherworlds.gg if you're interested. I am going to be doing a circuit of the 4X games and doing a little guest spot on the Explorminate podcast, talking about using the Steam Deck for 4X gaming coming up here. So I'll share when that episode launches of their podcast to give them a little plug, but otherwise I'm doing great.
So is Explorminate still Nate and Rich doing the thing, or is it different people these days?
It is still Rob. Nate is
or Rob. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing your coverage of it. I should be in a couple months getting my email because I am Q2 Steam Deck. Awesome. So I'm hoping to get mine. So in other words, you'll be the beta guy. So like if you say that it's not good, I'll still have time to cancel my.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the press coverage on the thing has been kind of all over the place, right? I think people who understand that it's a PC and a Linux PC to boot, right, know what they're getting into and know that it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be a console experience like you get with a Xbox or a Switch or whatever. And people who are going into it with that mindset are happy, right? They know what they're getting. The people who expect it to be a PC version of the Switch, maybe not so happy because it's not. It's just not there yet. Now, maybe in a couple years after Valve has had time to smooth off all the rough edges, that'll change. But they're, you know, to their credit, Valve's putting a lot of energy into this. They're doing more active development than I've seen from Valve in, you know, the last 10 years. Time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I'm encouraged. I'm excited. I love tech in general. So this is just kind of fun for me anyway. I was joking off air, though, that it's a little bit hard to even consider opening the thing, given how much they're going for on eBay.
No kidding.
It's nuts right now. So people are super excited about this thing.
Well, do you think you could play esports games on that thing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think anybody who plays games competitively, you know, probably wants wired internet rather than wireless to minimize latency. So the fact that I can plug in a USB-C network adapter to this thing and run it wired, I suppose, means that, yeah, I could do some esports. I think the screen size might be a hindrance, but I suppose it depends on the game.
Nice. Well, wait till people find out that it's the best Bitcoin mining platform, and then nobody will be able to get one.
Yeah, it'll join the GPU in rarity price, I guess.
That's funny. Yeah, well, that's actually the top of our show today is esports. Kind of wanted to talk about it. It's you know, of course, with, you know, the pandemic and lockdowns and all kinds of things, it definitely put a hindrance on a lot of industries out there, but I think esports definitely was hit in a weird and unique way. I've been struggling to try and find, you know, not that I don't think that it should exist, but I've definitely enjoyed watching, you know, friends play matches against each other in fighting games, for example, or I've enjoyed going to the arcade and challenging someone to some Street Fighter 2 or something like that, or you know, definitely casually playing StarCraft, but there's some serious competitive natures out there when it comes to gaming, and esports is an interesting thing because it's no longer necessarily just like an amateurish thing, right? There's a technically a professional level, if you will, of it, rather than just going and playing ladder matches online and you know, until you beat them all, I guess, so to speak. But I find that like esports in this day and age is definitely in a unique and interesting area where But I definitely wanted to get your all's take on it. Like, what are your thoughts on esports, especially, you know, now in kind of a mostly post, you know, pandemic world we live in at the moment. Anyway, I didn't know what you guys had, you know, some of the initial thoughts before we kind of deep dive into it.
You know, I think part of, obviously games can be played online. And so you could have a completely virtual esports scene. But what we've seen happen is people want to go and see their favorite games being played, potentially by their favorite esports, you know, athletes, in person. And, you know, to your point, we had like Overwatch League building stadiums in all these different cities and actually having, you know, teams that were based in a particular city. And, you know, that harkens back to traditional sports. But a big part of that was having a place to go in Houston, in LA, in Shanghai, wherever, to go see your favorite Overwatch players, you know, killing each other or whatever. And I think, you know, Blizzard, to their credit, got something that a lot of people still don't understand, which is that a lot of what esports is about, a lot of the enthusiasm is because it's an event and it's something you go do. And it's like going to a baseball game or going to a basketball game. You go and it's part of the experience is being there and being in the stands versus just watching it on a stream.
So that gives me an idea. What about if Twitter bought one of those stadiums and then they actually had like Twitter death matches, like you, instead of fighting online, you can actually be sponsored to like meet and gladiator in front of an audience.
And thus that's how
tweet beef out.
And that's how Unreal Tournament in real life gets started.
Yeah. I was thinking Running Man, but yeah
there you go. Too. Well, I mean, that was the idea of Unreal, right? Like that was kind of the concept of the world of Unreal Tournament was it was like in the future corporations sponsor these like big death matches, you know, and it's televised. And so
yeah,
that's kind of how Unreal Tournament kind of got started. But in the fictional world of Unreal Tournament, that is. But
thank you for that lore dump table. I'm glad that we've caught everybody up on Unreal's
history. That like 20 plus year old game. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're welcome.
No, I mean, it's funny that there is lore for every game out there, folks. Just
there kind of is. But no, like esports to me, like when I think about esports, like I think maybe because I'm showing my age, but I usually think of like the Korean televised like esports of StarCraft, like back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, where usually the Asian culture was the ones that kind of started the esports thing as like a global thing, right? Like it was really hugely popular to hear coming from South Korea. And there were stories about like, you know, there's like a cyber cafe on every corner and everybody's playing StarCraft and it's televised over there. It was a huge cultural thing for them in that country. And in like Western countries, it seems like the concept of televised video game sporting events has struggled to take off. Now, it's not that it doesn't happen, but it's not as commonplace. It's not as popular. But I do think, though, that there was something that was kind of popular for a short-lived period of time that was similar to, I guess, the esports thing, which was back in the day on TV, there was a show called Arena that was essentially two, you know, it was kind of a competition show where you'd have you and your friends versus a team of other friends that were, you know, gamers. And they would play a variety of games for points, and whoever got the most points at the end of the show won. And then, you know, they'd face off against another team on the next show, blah blah blah. And it was kind of like a games game show, if you will. And but it was like a gauntlet of stuff. Like they'd have to play like a DDR game, and then they'd have to play like SOCOM or something like that. And then they'd go and play something on the PC. And so it was like who's the best gaming team, not really what are you good at as a single game. And that kind of mentality harkened to the LAN partier inside of me from my youth, right? Like, I mean, you'd go to a LAN party for a weekend and you're playing a variety of games with a bunch of your friends. You know, you're standing up local servers to play like CS, you know, playing Counter-Strike, or you're setting up local little servers to play Unreal Tournament, you know, with your friends, or Halo or something like that. That's what to me is like the amateur competitive gaming nature. Like, you and your friends you know, have your own little circles of gaming. And it's because it's hard for me to like want to follow a gaming professional. Like, I don't know of any names in the gaming professional space other than maybe like team names, like Team Liquid or whatever it's called, is one that comes to mind. You know, I know that there's a lot of individual like players who play StarCraft that aren't necessarily on a team, you know, that have been, you know, that get noticed or whatever, but I feel like the fame of the esports thing fades because, you know, you don't do it as like a lifetime thing. Usually you retire and become like an announcer or some kind of like,
if you're lucky, right?
Yeah. Like, sure. You know, and a lot of them too, they'll go into like the streaming space and maybe they'll be a streamer for a while. And I just think like the esports world is such a short lived round of competitiveness for people. And that brings back to mind though, the Silver Snipers or something like that.
Silver Foxes, wasn't it?
Or something. Yeah, it was.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It was that crew of like 60-year-old plus people who were playing competitive first-person shooters together online.
CS:GO and a few others, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. I love the concept of that. Like, I love the idea that even into my 60s, 70s, and hopefully 80s and beyond, I'm still going to be playing games and having fun doing it. So,
well, you're going to jack in them into the socket in the back of your spine probably by then, but if the cyberpunk future is to be believed. But yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I want to play games for the rest of my life. I've done it my whole life so far, so why wouldn't I want to play well into my old age? Hell, I'll finally be able to get to my backlog because I won't have a job. I'll be retired.
Nursing homes are going to be like the biggest LAN party.
Yeah, seriously.
And it'll be great because you meet new players every day. Well, you just don't remember who they were.
Oh, no. But yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned StarCraft, and I do have some firsthand experience with the StarCraft scene in Korea in the 90s. I was working at Blizzard at the time and traveled to Korea, and, you know, turning on the TV in the hotel room, and there was not one, but two 24/7 channels of StarCraft esports on in the hotel in Korea. Like, that was just normal TV. And they had color commentators and they had the whole thing going, right? So it was a phenomenon in Korea, which I, like you said, kind of launched a lot of the esports excitement, I think. But you had a country of 33 million people, Korea, South Korea, and it was estimated 30 million of them played game. So 90% basically of the population were gamers in some form or another.
Well, is that because they weren't like front loaded with NASCAR and football and all the other sports that Americans are all like, well, we were born on this, so now we have to convert to esports. And with them, it was just like, hey, cool, esports.
Maybe, yeah. I think it was, you know, there's probably a ton of cultural factors that I'm not even, you know, aware or familiar enough to really speak to. But I found it so fascinating just how popular the esports scene was for StarCraft. And, you know, you fast forward to StarCraft 2 and Blizzard tried to control the esports rights for StarCraft 2, because the boat had sailed, right? The ship had sailed for StarCraft. They couldn't go back and change the license terms. They didn't feel like they could anyway, and make it enforceable to where they could dictate who could use it for commercial use, like esports. But with StarCraft II, that was certainly part of the license from day one. And it actually created a huge lawsuit in Korea between the two major esports companies, because Blizzard only licensed one of them. And that one sued the other one and tried to put them out of business because they were illegally, you know, broadcasting StarCraft II.
You know, I started thinking, like, you know, I've done some streaming in the past myself, and I'm actually able to finally get back into it now. And I've got this basement down here, and this is making me wonder if I should try and, like, Wayne's World it down here and do, like, some public, like, access channel show that I simulcast to, like, Twitch or something like that, that's also going to, like, the local, you know, public broadcasting station or whatnot, and, you know, do gaming coverage and whatnot. Who knows?
Yeah, like, I mean, it would be a blast, right?
Is that still a thing? Like, could I, you know, Tables World, excellent.
That public, I assume public access is still a thing, right? Because that all came out of FCC regulations in the 90s trying to open up the cable business to public interest. So theoretically, there is probably still a channel on the cable, you know, on the cable company's lineup somewhere.
Well, and some of that stuff can be broadcast over the airwaves, right? Like, I mean, you could still potentially pick up some public access stuff through just a regular antenna.
Also true. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, yeah.
For a brief shit of time there, I was actually a camera guy on a public access show for a few episodes. Yeah. Back That's in the day.
You know, that kind of makes me wonder. I feel like I'm going to research this to, like, not actually do anything, but now I'm kind of curious as to what it would take to actually do some kind of actual, like, television public broadcast of some, like, gaming stuff in my local area. Mm. That could be interesting. I know that the local school here actually has an esports team, so I mean there could be some viability there. I might be able to do, like, a partnership with, because I know the local ISP sponsors the school's esports team. And so, who knows? Maybe there might be something there. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the whole idea of, like, broadcasting, you know, games with such the gaming world that we live in, you know, I find it interesting that there's not more going on in public spaces in our country related to gaming on a more frequent basis. It seems to be very pocketed in, like, areas. I feel like definitely California's got a lot going on with it in different pockets of that. But of course, that's where, like, E3 traditionally used to be, and some other big, like, gaming conventions were out there. That's where a lot of big gaming studios are. So, I mean, it's only natural that, you know, there'd be stuff there. But, like, you know, I feel like in some of the major cities that I've lived in over the years, there, it just, like, the scene just hasn't felt like it's really been there. But who knows? Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm just not that well informed.
I think you're probably accurate in that. I'm just trying to think, like, I know in the public libraries, right, because they're considered a public institution, they are open to everybody. I know of folks who, you know, maybe can't afford a computer, they're on disability or something. They go in and play games in the library, in the public library. And so, you know, there are people out there who are excited by games who maybe don't have ready access to them. And games being elevated to that level of sport entertainment of you know, spectacle, only reinforces the passion that I think people have for it, wanting to play and, you know, be the next big Evo fighting game champion or the next big iRacing circuit champion or something like that, because maybe they physically are unable to do that in real life. You know, they can't practice martial arts, or they can't drive a car because of a you know, physical issues. So, you know, there is something about games that the being virtual, they allow you to do things that otherwise wouldn't be possible. I don't know how much that plays into esports, but it feels like there's something there.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I mean the ease of access now is definitely a thing. I know that there's like some, you know, I wonder how much some of the barcades actually organize like, you know, little tournaments here and there. Because I know that in Columbus there's a couple of barcades. There's a 16-bit arcade down there that I've been to a couple of times. You know, like the games are free, but you come and buy the beer and play the games for free. And so, you know, and I've seen people throw down challenges like, you know, someone's playing Street Fighter and challenging all the other people in the bar to play and, you know, that kind of thing. And so like that kind of stuff to me is fun. Like that dynamic, just, you know, off the cuff, you know, going and watching, you know, someone throw down somebody else just kind of like naturally like that. Out in the wild has always been fun to me. Or, you know, you go to like a retro store and someone's playing Smash and like someone else comes in and says, hey, I'll, you know, I bet I could beat you. Or,
well, that's the thing, like the east or the bars, you know, barcades or whatever, maybe that's what they need to embrace, is local tournament stuff. Is like come in and drink and play with other people here, you know, not so much online.
Certainly for better or for worse, right? That's what revitalized a lot of gaming stores, is the rise of collectible card games like Magic and Pokemon. They could bring people into their store, which got them sales. Ultimately, if you have more foot traffic, you know, statistically, you're just going to sell more. So certainly, you know, having tournaments and stuff would be a great way, I think, to get people into your barcade. And, you know, sell some booze, sell some seats, some tickets. You know, if you had it set up for some seating where people could watch in the TVs in the place, the local tournament, I think that would be a lot of fun. People go to Hooters and Twin Peaks and all these kind of bars and watch, you know, football games all day, right? And those restaurants cater to that. Buffalo Wild Wings is another great example where they'll have beer pitcher, you know, deals if you sit there basically all day.
Here's an idea that I have for barcades. I think this could be, you could almost turn this into a circuit where you set up at a bunch of different local barcades, a booth. Let's say you put some like fighting game of the week machine in there, but you've got cameras set up and someone there to like make sure you sign like release forms for people. But like you can go in and it's that, and there's like a Twitch channel or something like that set up for that bar, and people, and like just, you know, on the fly you could watch people coming in and out and like on the fly watch all these randos fighting each other in like these little local tournaments or something like that. But I think that could be a really cool and an interesting way of, you know, kind of getting certain stuff out there. A, it would also then bring in advertising for those local businesses that are doing those kinds of things. Like, you know, here's a, you know, this barcade in, say, Austin, you know, you can go check it out. And here it is on Twitch doing like local weekend tournaments that you can go and participate in and grab a beer. Or, you know, here's one out in like Vegas, or here's one out in like Boston or something like that. So it's like, you know, I think there could be a circuit for that. You know, of course, you know, you got to be careful with, you know, release forms and stuff like that, because, you know, you're live broadcasting people's faces on there. But I'm sure there's a way to get around that kind of stuff that could be very interesting. So that's my invention pitch of the week.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Like there is. I mean, even if you considered it sort of the double A league, right, the minor league for in baseball terms, to have that circuit or even regional circuit, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, Arizona, New Mexico or something. Right. And you have a little tour. Like I think that would be really cool. It seems like we skipped over a lot of that stuff. We went from like LAN parties right to big stadium esports.
Yeah, it's
and we
weird.
Sort of missed that in between. Yeah,
yeah, it's really weird, because I feel like there's not enough. And I know that again it exists in pockets, but I don't feel like there's enough amateur leagues out there, enough amateur like, or at least amateur awareness. And I think that there should be more amateur awareness of some of these things. I know that there's they do exist. I just want more of it. or at least more, you know, somehow to help better advertise it in some form or fashion on these different styles of things. And not just esports in the terms of like video games, but I think almost gaming sports, where you can have competitive tabletop stuff being broadcast, even some of these card games. Because, you know, in a way, you look at something like Hearthstone, which is highly competitive. You can look at it as an esports, but it's also a competitive deck building game. So you don't have to just leave it in the digital deck building games. You can do the physical deck building games too. I feel like that could be competitively broadcast.
Well, you know how the bars used to do like wet t-shirt contests and stuff to drive foot traffic. So what about like bring that to the future and we make an e-sport and it's competitive hot tub ASMR.
Well, we know from Twitch that there's interest.
Don't feed the beast here, buddy. Like,
Well, they used to do like hot dog eating contests and stuff, right? Well, now we just have rubber ear eating competitive.
Oh my god. Yes, but that, I mean, true. There, those things do exist, in my opinion, unfortunately. But I guess where there's a market, but no, like I mean, there's definitely. I definitely feel like there is a way to drive more public interest in some of these things that is more engaging than just because you know not everybody is going to be playing the StarCrafts, or not everybody's going to be playing the Rocket Leagues, or not everybody's going to be, but like you walk up, you take your friends out who are into going to bars, maybe they're just chill people that aren't fully into video games perhaps, but you take them to a barcade where they can still get beers and their social interaction, and they're like, hey man, you remember Street Fighter 2? Oh yeah, I used to play that one as a kid. Well, let's go play it. And then next thing you know, you're throwing down on Twitch, and you know, it gains more of the casual interest into a thing that can be more publicly received on an easier level than, you know, do I need a PC? Do I need to set up all this streaming configuration crap? Or, you know, now the public is more casually invested into it, is what I'm trying to get at. So,
well, and to your point, you don't have to be technical to go and enjoy it, where streaming, like, to be honest, you have to be fairly technical. You have to deal with audio issues and game capture and all these other things that just all that goes away, to your point, if you could go and do it at a location that was already kind of set up.
Yeah. So speaking of technical, all right, the thing about esports that does it for me is whenever, like, I can watch two people fight in Street Fighter, but I really don't know the intricacies of what's going on, like the technical stuff in the game. But whenever you have announcers that are commentating, then I'm more invested, because it's like, okay, now I know the names of these guys. I know some of the history. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, like last year at Evo, this is what went on. So now we're going to see a rematch between these guys. And the last time, you know, it was like he beat this guy with some, you know, like Korean super dash block thing that I wouldn't know if I saw, but the guy can call it out and be like, oh, this is what that was that you just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how hard it is to do.
I feel like there's not a lot of consistency there. Like, I mean, I've seen certain things, but like, I've not seen like a consistent, like, you know, player base maybe. And maybe I just don't not watch enough esports. Maybe I'm speaking from ignorant standpoint here, and I'm totally okay with that too. But it just doesn't, whenever I get into watching some of these things from time to time, I'll go and check it out. I'm just like, I don't feel like there's an investment here other than just watching two people play this game. And for me, that's that. If it's interesting and the casting's good enough, that's all I really need. Like, I've
got. Yeah, I like it whenever it's actually like somebody who used to be one of the top pros has retired and now they're a commentator.
Right.
And I know exactly what's going on.
And I watch the ESL stuff with StarCraft from time to time. Like, I'll load into a Twitch channel and watch a couple of like StarCraft matches and hear the commentating. And it actually kind of gets exciting when you have people who really know what they're talking about that are commentating a thing.
Yes,
you know,
it helps immensely.
It's really cool to like get those people who like understand the metas. Understand, like, you know, the different play styles of certain players. There's just not enough of that that's good. But like, I could sit and watch Korean matches all day long being announced in Korean, and I don't care, there's a level of excitement that's in their voices that kind of
just like gibberish, right?
But like I'm in it and I'm like they're doing things and I'm yeah. engaged with that because there's a level of excitement there. But
well, it's like I've been to because we got a hockey stadium like right down the road here, right? So it's like I have been to Hurricanes games and I feel like I would much rather just be watching this on TV. First off, the seat is better. right? The beer doesn't cost as much. And also, I have an idea what the hell's going on because there's a commentator. So what would be nice is if in this age of Wi-Fi stuff, right, if I could take a pair of earbuds into the stadium and there's actually commentators, like I can listen to the official commentating coming from the booth up there while I'm actually watching the sport, maybe that makes it more interesting, right? Put a headphone jack on the back of the seat in front of me or something.
Well, I've done something similar when you go to a get their little device that has the narrated tour as you walk around, but you can kind of pause it and rewind it and do whatever as you go through. Like that adds to the experience for sure. And I think you're right. If I could have that color commentary and be there in person, that would be really interesting. So
now my wife really hates it because whenever I walk in the room and I ask her what the hell's going on TV, she just doesn't want to.
Not a fan, huh?
I walk in and like halfway through an episode of something and it's just like, why are they doing that? Who are these people? She's like, shut up.
I'm trying to watch. Yeah. I'm familiar.
But it's like, but you're the pro. You've like inhaled the entire first three seasons. Like you must explain. And her answer is just, trust me, it's dumb. You wouldn't like it.
No.
Well, she's usually right. So
it's like my excuse for like, why are you watching the new Star Trek stuff? Yeah. You're probably not gonna like it, and then you start watching it, and then you start screaming at me of all the dumb things that you're seeing. I was like, bro, I already told you.
It's like, bro, why were you so right? Why is this so dumb?
Yeah, no, this I could screenshot the conversation we had yesterday.
Oh dear.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that there's definitely some more that esports could do to gain more public opinion, because I feel like esports is in just a weird state. Like, I mean, you look at what happened with like the Overwatch League stuff, right? And you know, Overwatch in general has just been struggling. Stuff with Blizzard, and I think the only successful thing that's still going on from an esports perspective for Blizzard is StarCraft 2. Maybe some Hearthstone, I would think, are the two.
Yeah. Hearthstone's meta is so off the rails, though. It seems like it's hard to, you know, it's hard to say.
That's true.
How did they screw it up with Heroes of the Storm? Like, why didn't that catch on? Because I thought that was a much more interesting MOBA than the other offerings
And that's the problem, because there was such a huge fan base for Dota and League already that the thing with Heroes is that it was like a lightweight version of those two. I guess is the argument that's made. There's not as much emphasis on the item store as Dota and League has, because there's an item play that is heavily involved with both Dota and League that is not present, I think, at all in Heroes.
Is just play the game, not like meta build stuff.
Right, and so it became kind of like the casuals version of competitive MOBAs. I personally loved Heroes. I thought Heroes was a fun time. I really did enjoy my time with it. I haven't played it in a while, but I never thought it was a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. But they kind of stopped, I think, really pouring heavy investment into it and kind of decided to focus on other things. But of course, Blizzard, unfortunately, has been kind of on fire for the last several years, dealing with all kinds of shenanigans. But you know, it'd be really interesting to see Blizzard kind of come back out, you know, or at least have something from them be a little bit more interesting, because the only things that I see, I mean, there's some Warcraft 3 stuff that's going on these days, but, you know, Warcraft 3 doesn't nearly interest me as much, unless it was like maybe some of the original stuff, but
Hey, so when Warcraft 3, like, Resurrected or whatever the heck it is, came out, people were screaming because they broke all the mod stuff, right? And they didn't have, like, a StarCraft 2 arcade. Did they ever circle back and, like, put that mod arcade junk in? Like, can I play Dota in...
I think they've made some concessions there, but I'm not entirely sure. I don't know what the deal is, honestly, because I haven't kept up with it. It was one of those things where it was such a dumpster fire that I just like kind of walked away. Maybe one of these days I'll go back and check it out and see how it's going. But you know, there's still some esports stuff going on with that one. But I think the only thing I usually hear in regards to esports and Blizzard games right now is mostly StarCraft 2. I know some WoW stuff and Warcraft 3 stuff happens, but it's not as prevalent as the StarCraft 2, I feel.
Well, that's the problem in general with all products that get big, right? Is popular thing gets more popular and stays popular. So even a better competitor has a hell of a time breaking into the market and getting an audience. All right. So
yeah, well, and then we entered into the realm of the hero shooters, which I'm not a huge fan of. And hero shooters being Overwatch or Valorant is another
Rainbow
one. Rainbow Six has definitely become a hero shooter. I'm just not a huge fan of that. I kind of miss the old school strategy of just arena shooters.
I like being just like I'm a generic dude. And it's my skills. It's not like, well, I have these magic powers because I picked, Bucky O'Hare.
Yeah, or I've got these three like, leveled up cards on my character trait. Whatever.
Oh God.
You know, that's
you're calling me back to some Star Wars trouble.
Yeah, well, that was Battlefront 2's big problem for like the longest time was like they just had these weird cards and like. You get into a match and everybody's got purple leveled cards and you're the new guy and you're just getting smoked left and right and you have no room to grow.
And yeah. Well, even Titanfall did that quite a bit, but it wasn't as egregious there.
Well, Titanfall 2, I liked a lot. And unfortunately, Titanfall, Respawn ran into some, I guess they're still in trouble with that game, but Titanfall 2 was a really good time, and I miss that game a lot. The single-player campaign was fantastic, because they actually put a single-player campaign in it that was good. And the multiplayer, I thought, was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It's a real shame what happened with that game. It was, like, the closest thing I felt like we were ever going to get to, like, a 2142, you know? I felt, at least. But... all we got instead was Battlefield 2042, and that's hot garbage. So it's a real shame.
Yeah, it's ongoing wildfire.
It's really weird that we've had games in the past that were good, and you know people want to move on to newer games, but it's just like you could still learn a thing or two from these old games that were good. You know, keep it simple. And you could add new kind of ways of doing things, but you can still keep it simple, you know, in how it's executed. You don't have to make it so complex. You don't have to reinvent the wheel necessarily, you know.
Well, it's the problem you get into is like the game's too different. Then people are like, screw this game. It's too different. And then if it's like mostly the same, then they're like, well, this is just a DLC. This isn't like a whole new game. So, it's like it'll get hate either direction.
Yeah. What was it that came out that felt like it should have been? The Cops versus Robbers Battlefield game.
Hardline.
Yeah, that should not have been a standalone game, period. Like, I don't understand why they even went that direction. Like, that should have been a big DLC or expansion to, well, whatever it was, Battlefield 3 at the time, I think, or 4. It was essentially just a reskin of their existing game, you know? And I freaking hated that, and I think that's why a lot of people hated it. Because it was like, we don't need this.
And that's like with 2142. With 2142, everybody was like, "Oh, I wish we had 2142 back," but not. So then they made like a middle ground, right? And it's like, "Oh, it's 2042." But even premise alone, not great. And, you know, it's like, go for it, man. Give me hover tanks and mechs, or just don't even bother. And then, you know, technical issues that it had. And
the UI is atrocious. Now, I will say this. The tank gameplay in 2042, I think, is a lot of fun. I love it. But the everything else, like even just trying to get into a round, was just terrible. And
that UI. I like the concept of, like, all eras of Battlefield are here, except for 2142, unfortunately.
But not all eras are there. That's the actual problem.
Well, it's like, do you want to play World War II in this modern thing? Then sure, you can. Or you can play World War II versus modern, or...
And that was really it. That's like, that's
the... Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that was of interest to me. And the package that one nugget of interest is in is so terrible. I'm really glad I dodged that bullet by just waiting.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely a thing, but there you go. I mean, there's always probably going to be some form of competitiveness with games, depending on the game, for sure. I mean, you got... You know, people who just get really good at a thing. Like, you can go and play the original Unreal Tournament to this day, and there's still people playing it that are just on fire. You know, they've been playing this game for, like, the last 25 years, and it's just, like, you load in, and they insta-snipe you, because it's like, you know, welcome aboard, noob, been doing this for 20 years. You know, which is crazy. It also just goes to the longevity of games, man. There's some games that just have a longevity to them.
Yeah, it's like, if you ever want to just get your ass beat, pick some old game that's got like a 200 player population, but it's steady. Go join that, and you'll just get smoked, because this is 200 people that have just played this one game for the last 20 years.
Yep. Yeah, I used to play a Day of Defeat Source with a gaming guild. You know, is our gaming clans still a thing? Do they still call them clans that's out there?
Yeah, I think so.
So, I mean, it was with a group called EGO, and they used to be primarily just a Day of Defeat Source gaming clan, and eventually they evolved to include a whole bunch of other different games because they grew so big. But, I mean, I used to remember logging in for day after day when I was like... just out of, you know, it was like late high school, early college days, you know, and I'd play mostly nothing but that all week long on the same two maps, you know, just climbing the ranks, you know, playing with those guys. And eventually I became like server admin and stuff like that, because they had a really cool ranking system within their guild where you could rank up within the guild to become server admins. Now, you don't get full access to the server, but you get admin moderation stuff where you can like kick hackers or you know, make room for other guild members who get first priority, and they even train people on being good moderators and admins of game servers. So it was like an incentive, right? Because you're not just, you know, part of this, but like you're actually learning how to. And so that's how they kind of let, you know, their stuff operate, was, you know, they're the owners of it, but they don't have to run it all the time. They've got a community of people running it for them at that point. And, you know, and they kept their gaming servers in the number one and two spots for like years. So like anytime you loaded in, it was always like our servers were always the most populated at the top of the list. And,
you mean like you used to be able to own your own server?
Yeah, that's remember crazy. That? Oh, I know the concept is unreal, but
you might get to know people, and you might get to like weed out the idiots, and
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about like the esports stuff is like, you know, those casual tournaments, those homebrew tournaments of, you know, LAN parties and stuff like that become immensely harder when you just have, you know, games as a service style, like games these days where you have to play on these, you know, meshed networks of, you know, peer-to-peer, you know, gameplay, you know, setups that they do these days, because it's a service game now. You know, that's kind of like, that plays to me in the esports sense, too. Something else that's interesting that someone was talking about in the esports sense, when you look at game streaming to, like, you know, people's browsers. I Mellified, were you saying this not too long ago? I feel like you were the one that was talking about this, or I was watching something, somebody else talk about this, where it's like you can kind of control and ensure that there's no cheating going on when you have everybody using a game streaming service to play the esports. It puts everybody on the same playing field.
I wasn't the one who talked about that, but I know exactly what you're referring to. So a lot of the two ways that you can cheat, right, is you can do something locally on the computer. You can have some program running that changes the game in some way. And at this point, I won't say it's foolproof, but the game makers have kind of figured out how to detect that and block it and, you know, handle that. But what they don't have a good way to handle is a network proxy. So if you have a second computer and you run all of your network packets through that second computer, if that second computer is running a program that understands the game and can decode the network packets and change things in real time or near real time, it's basically undetectable, right?
Which is how EQ Radar used to work back in the late 90s.
Yeah, well,
because we could play EQ and know where things spawned up and have a map of the zone and stuff, but you needed a second machine to do it.
Right. And so there are the committed cheaters can do stuff like that, right? And even a lot of times it works on console too, because you can run your Xbox through another computer and do the same thing. But if all you're getting from the streaming service is the video, and all you're sending back is your inputs, there's no opportunity to mess with the network packets and actually change something about the game, because you're not sending the game action, like the game state data, because all that's stored on the server. All you're sending is, hey, I just pushed left, you know, the left stick for this distance for this amount of time. And then the game is telling you what happened. So, yeah, it is an interesting development that, you know, potentially you could run all that stuff on the server in a data center and everybody's on equal footing.
If they have equal internet access, that is, but yeah.
There is that, yes.
That's the only caveat there, I feel like. But yeah, well, regardless.
Well, that's back to the like do it in a controlled environment thing, right? You play on our computers in our stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they've even had people like try to sneak shit in, like encoded into their mouse or whatever. So then it's like, now you got to use our mouse and keyboard too. And, you know,
yeah,
at that point, it's a level playing field because everybody's on exactly the same equipment and we're on a LAN. So there's no laggy BS, because they faced that last year with Evo, right? Because a lot of the fighting games, the netcode is just bad. Mm-hmm. And that kind of forced all the people that were making fighting games to be like, okay, well, we're finally going to implement rollback netcode kind of thing. So rollback netcode's very interesting. I learned about that this year, just kind of getting into fighting games again. So it doesn't actually like roll things back on the screen. But the assumption is that if I don't know what you're doing, I'm going to assume that the thing that you're doing is the last thing that you were doing last time I saw you. Because like, if you're pushing forward or back on the stick, you're probably going to still be on that like a tenth of a second later. And if not, then we'll catch up. And then the stuff on the screen is usually, you know, 3 frames behind whatever the input was. So you've got 3 frames worth to figure out what the other person was doing. So it almost completely eliminated like laggy warping and pausing and stuff in fighting games. So that made Evo 2020 and 2021 actually possible. But, and it, to the point where I've seen where some companies are going back and implementing rollover netcode or rollback netcode rather in their previous titles. You know, it's like they go back and it's like one of the Guilty Gear games, XRD, just got it added, and that's like a 5 or 6 year old game.
Yeah, because it keeps it available for competitive play, which is, you know, what keeps these games alive. Makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they used to compete with Street Fighter 2. It was the arcade machines, right? You were playing on an arcade machine at Evo, and Evo got huge, and then the console thing went on. And the problem was they didn't have arcade perfect ports of the game, so it didn't really count. But then it was just like, okay, well, we're going to play like Super Nintendo Street Fighter 2 is its own category, it doesn't compete with the real arcade cabinet version. But it used to be like console ports of games from the arcade didn't count. And then now that we actually have one-to-one perfect emulation almost of console arcade boards, then they're saying, okay, well, emulators are allowed now.
Hmm.
Rather than just forcing it to be on the arcade board. But the majority of the scene has actually, like, PlayStation bought Evo. So I hope you like PlayStation if you like fighting games, because they own it now. You know, there will still be ports and stuff to Xbox, but the official version of Tekken or Street Fighter or whatever will be the PlayStation one, because that's the competitive one that's licensed for Evo.
Well, regardless, I think there is something with the esports stuff that could be done. I think there needs to be more public buy-in. I think there needs to be also more variety in the esports scene. I do like the idea of the casual stuff, not just the full-on pro things, but like the idea of doing the arena TV show to me was just fun. You know, it's like a gauntlet of different games that each team has to play to see, you know, who's like the better overall gaming crew, if you will. To me, that's something that's more appealing, because you get a variety of stuff that you're watching, you're seeing what's there. You're also kind of getting introduced to other games. And so I've never been one to be so stuck into one, you know, specific niche of a game. There are times where I go through phases where I might be playing one game a little bit more than anything else, but you know, I like the gaming scene as a whole. So, but I think that also makes it hard for me to watch esports at times, because I'm just not so clued into the teams or the players and all that stuff. I just want to watch the gameplay and hear the commentary. So yeah,
I think the commentary definitely is a big factor in making esports more accessible, is having good commentators to help people who aren't, you know, aware of all the nuance understand what's happening competitively.
Well, I think that'll be wrap it up for this episode. You guys can definitely find this and more things over on our Discord server at discord.otherworlds.gg, where we have conversations about this kind of stuff all the time. You can see also links to our other things, more shows, and get the latest on our gaming hangout sessions. Usually we try to do something on Thursday nights. It's been a little rough trying to schedule regular Thursday things for me recently, because I've just been so busy IRL, but I'm trying to get back into that more, so come on over and check it out at discord.otherworlds.gg. This has been episode number 55. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeehaw.